Hi, and welcome to The Playlist, where we talk about good TV, great movies, and where you can watch them, with special attention to the best of things you can find at SBS On Demand. I'm your host, Fiona Williams. I'm the managing editor of SBS Movies, and I'm joined by my co-host and SBS TV Guide editor, Nick Bassine.
Hello, everyone.
What have we got today, Nick?
We're just putting out a cheeky little pre-recorded bonanza, because I'm going away for a couple of weeks.
Yes. Where are you off to?
Thailand.
With the family?
Yeah.
Have to think about that. Yes, correct.
Yeah, with the family. So I'm about to take a long plane ride, and I have to map out my viewing plan for the trip.
Yes. And what do you like to watch on planes?
Well, usually I use the time to catch up on all the crap that I wouldn't pay for. And it's mainly, like, last time I saw Suicide Squad and The Graduate. I'm just kidding. That's a classic film.
Good one.
So, yeah. So, they tend to be big blockbusters that I don't get to see. Because that's what they offer, generally. Sometimes if you go into the older ones, they'll have some good ones that you missed the first time around. But normally, I find that's what I watch.
Yeah, same. I go for more of the action movies, too. I saw the first Hunger Games on a plane. And another excellent Kevin Costner action movie directed by Luc Besson, whose name escapes me, but three Days to Kill, something like that.
Three Dog Night?
No. I think I just gave you the title. But things like that, that for when you're not wanting to have a snooze, you want to stay awake and just kill a couple of hours. It's great.
I don't see it as killing any hours, because I don't believe you should waste time.
No, this is true.
So if,
but you're a captive audience.
After 20 minutes, we're not going. I mean, any movie has 20 minutes. I'll give it 20 minutes to get you, to hook me in, and then I'll start leaning on the fast forward button.
Yeah.
Because I also like to get through as much as possible, because I know I'm never going to watch these movies ever again, so I need to get it done.
That's a thing for you. You've said before you are a completist and you don't switch off, you more switch forward, and you like to just get to the end. Does that apply in planes as well?
Absolutely. It's not as easy because the button isn't as comfortable.
It depends on the in-flight entertainment system. Yeah. See, I don't get that. If you don't like it, and
just
if you're not
off,
actually going to be watching it and engaging as a viewer, watching it in fast forward doesn't work for me. I don't understand that about you.
But after 20 minutes, there's a setup.
Yeah.
And don't you want to see what the payoff is, even if you're not going to watch the movie?
Not necessarily, no. If I'm not interested enough to watch it real time unfold, unfold real time, rather, I'll flick to something else. Anyway, that's me, that's you.
Something wrong with me.
We could spend the whole episode talking about this, but
aren't we?
I'm bored, and I think I don't think people are fast forwarding to the end to see the payoff on this one. But so that's you, and that's why we're here today.
Payoff is I didn't get on the plane.
We're still recording this episode. What have we got today?
Well, first up, we've got Bill Nye, who's in Their Finest, which is a movie that's coming out this week. And he, of course, has been in 500 million movies that everyone knows and loves. My favorite is Still Crazy, because he's very funny in it.
That's the one about the band?
Yes. The band gets back together. I was just realized that is from 1998, which is almost 20 years ago.
And
I remember when I was just a lad in my salad days watching that in the theater. It's terrifying.
Want to feel old right now? Yes. That IMDb has a habit of doing that, doesn't it?
Oh, it's awful. It's like looking into, it's like staring at your own demise.
It's exactly what that's like. Yeah, I didn't have a favorite Bill Nye movie per se. He's quite often the best thing about.
You've said that movies. Love Actually was your favorite film.
I don't believe I have. No, I don't understand all the hate for it. I mean, it's pleasant enough. It's become a bit of a thing to hate on Love Actually. He's great in it. His character's quite fun.
It's become a thing to hate because people love it so
much,
because BuzzFeed does 5 million lists about it.
That's true. So now it's a thing to hate on Love Actually. Whatever. So Bill was in town recently to promote Their Finest, which is in cinemas today, as you mentioned. It's set during the London Blitz, and it's a story of an emerging female screenwriter, played by Gemma Arterton, who is assigned the task of working on a film that's sanctioned by the government, a propaganda film basically, to promote the British spirit and to basically a morale booster for a war-torn country. It's by the director Lona Scherfig, who you probably know did an Education a couple of years ago, which coincidentally is available at SBS On Demand to watch in full. And Bill Nye plays Ambrose Hilliard. He is an actor. He's a fading leading man. He's sort of getting on a bit. He's used to being the lead, but it's getting sort of the older roles now. But he takes himself very seriously and his craft. But he's a bit of a comic relief in the movie. He gets a couple of good lines.
Yeah, very entertaining.
As was Bill Nye when we had a chat to him.
Was it a stretch for you, play Ambrose?
Yeah, well, as you know, they were looking for someone to play a chronically self-absorbed, pompous actor in his declining years, and they thought of me. So obviously that was a stretch, and I had to do a lot of research. Checking out those other guys who are in fact like that. I've got to an age where there are several questions people ask you. How did you get into character and how much research did you do? And when you get to my age, it's refreshing because you can actually say, if you ask me how much research I did, absolutely none whatsoever. And if you ask me how did I get into character, I've never knowingly been in character in my life. I've heard great things about it, but it's just outside of my experience.
Ambrose comes to realize that he has responsibilities as an artist during wartime. Do you have similar feelings of responsibility as during trying times with things going on in the world?
Well, the way things have been going lately, it sort of brings to mind that I think myself and the kind of people that I mostly operate with, we have, broadly speaking, been in opposition to what goes on most of my life, really.
Right.
But now it's an emergency. And I think everyone is galvanized and shocked by recent events. And therefore you do feel that you want to do work which is useful in that respect. And fortunately, this film is, I would categorize it as one of those jobs.
Okay.
And about the time period it's set in, sort of that's a rich time. A lot of films are obviously set in London during the Blitz and whatnot. What is that time like for you to be in a film like that?
Well, I'm drawn to it because it's my parents' time. You know, my father was in the RAF. My mum worked nights during the Second World War, which was a reckless thing to do. And my childhood was, like everybody else's, was full of those stories and those movies, because those movies used to run every Sunday afternoon. I used to watch all those movies. You know? And in the middle of trying to make movies to keep people's spirits up and to deliver certain information about how to keep yourself safe during wartime, they actually managed to make some really, really cool movies under the most ridiculously difficult conditions. So yeah.
Do you have any idea about Oscar buzz? Or like, do you think the movie's got a shot?
This film, the first expression?
Oscar buzz.
I don't know what that means.
For Academy Award contention?
Oh, I see. I don't know. I have no idea.
You're not lobbying for that?
No. I don't know anything about those things. But I think the movie has... I mean, you know, it's tough out there with movies. You know, I think this movie has no problem if you can get people in to see it. The thing about what I admire about this movie, and like I admire about any book or record or piece of poetry, is that whatever else it's designed to deliver, it doesn't forget to entertain you, and it's a great night out. So it might, in that case, I do think it's got a shot because there aren't many of them. Aren't many. You know, when I was a kid, you went to the cinema and the deal was you spent some money, you went in feeling one way and you came out feeling a whole lot better. That's what this film does. And I've been on the road with this film for a while now. And, you know, we got a standing ovation in Toronto and they're hard to come by. And we took it to Dubai and they went crazy, you know. And in London town, more predictably, they cheered and went bonkers. And so, you know, it travels well and people just dig it. You know, they love it because it's because you get to laugh and you get to cry.
You know, you mentioned your style and not using other people as references and whatnot. Your distinctive style on screen, you know, it's very adaptable, but you do have a certain way of, you know, delivering your lines and presenting yourself. How did you hone that and sort of where does that sort of come from?
Gosh, that's a really good question to which I don't have a very good answer. I don't watch myself ever, so I'm not really... I sort of know what you mean, but I mean, I was thinking about this morning because I meet a lot of people because I walk everywhere and people often ask me questions which are mysterious to me because I've never seen the movies. Not because I don't know what happens in the movies, but they'll refer to something to do with my performance or something, and you're like, I'll take your word for it because I have no idea because I've never seen it. I mean, the job is to try and... The thing that interests me is a simple thing, but it's endlessly fascinating, is to try and make the lines sound like they just occurred to you and you've never said them before, which mightn't sound like a great ambition in life, but it's all I've got. And it's, but it's actually, you know, it's quite a, it's an endlessly, it's a sort of endlessly fascinating activity. And in terms of being funny or trying to be funny, that's also endlessly fascinating because you can always get it funnier or get it a bit, and what might make everybody, 500 people all laugh together in the dark at the same time is a mysterious and wonderful thing. And if you pull it off, it's deeply satisfying. So I don't know how, I could joke. I mean, when I was young and people used to talk about their process or their method, you'd be in digs and whenever that part of the conversation started, I'd put the kettle on, or I'd walk the dog or something, because my filthy secret was I didn't have one. And I always used to think, well, you ought to have, one day I'll get around to having one. But what I have in lieu of a method, and I kind of joke about this, but it's not actually a joke, is that I invent a hostile parallel universe in which I'm just about to get fired. And that, and I used to say that as a kind of joke, but actually it's actually true.
That's great.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a terrible way to go to work, but it works. You know what I mean? It galvanizes me. And I don't even have to make it up. I don't have to fake it. It's for real. I'm always thinking in a minute the director's going to come across the room and say, Bill, it's not working out. I mean, we thought it was going to work out, but unfortunately, you know what I mean? Now the other guy is available. So, please, you get paid, it's all right. I mean, in my early life, my perfect job would be one where they cancelled at the last minute, but you still got paid. That was the perfect gig.
I think we can all aim
for that.
That
is the perfect gig.
While I was watching this, I thought two things, that you should be getting a Netflix, your own Netflix series at some point. At some point soon, I hope you're getting offers. And have we been looking in the wrong places for James Bond?
Oh my gosh. You mean for his grandfather?
James Bond.
Right, okay.
What do you think?
Well, why not? There's a market out there, apparently. I could be, the thinking woman's James Bond. I don't think so. I would love to be. I'd love. You see, that's the groovy thing about vampires or anyone who has a superpower, is that it doesn't matter how old you are, you can still decimate whole cities.
That's right.
Or something.
Absolutely.
So I am looking. I would love to be. I'd love to have my action career. Was brief. You probably missed it. And it consisted of me going like that with a sword and then handing it to a younger man who was wearing a wig. A little like my hair. That's my acting career. But I'd really, in later life, I'd love to have to be an unlikely action hero.
Absolutely.
I'd love to be, who could actually. I did play a hitman once, but he was supposed to be a stupid hitman. Mm. And I kept wobbling the gun every time I shot anybody. The armored guy would come up and go, "Don't wobble the gun." I was like, "I'm not wobbling the gun, it just went off." Again, it was short-lived.
And of course, I mean, we can't not mention Love Actually, everyone,
yeah.
In the ether. Let's break some news. In addition to you wanting to be James Bond, is it likely to be a trilogy? Is there going to be more beyond the little mini-sequel?
Well, I don't know. You'd have to ask Richard Curtis. I know that they, you can imagine they're begging him to do it because, obviously, it would make everybody rich. But, that's easy for people to say and very difficult for Richard. He's done a brilliant job of imagining, for comic relief, imagining where those characters might be 14 years after we made the movie. And everyone came back. Everyone's there. Hugh Grant, Liam Neeson, Colin Firth, Andrew Lincoln, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Lucia, Keira Knightley. They all came back. Nobody hesitated. And it was great to see everybody and see that they were in such good shape and that I could still get into the trousers.
So our show is about TV and movies, and so we like to wrap up by asking guests what they've been watching, hating, loving, anywhere in between.
I almost exclusively watch what I call football, so I've been watching a lot of football.
Okay.
That doesn't help, does it? What have I been watching?
What about flying? You've been doing a lot of flying.
Pardon?
EPL.
Is that mean English Premier League?
I think
here
so.
It does,
yeah.
Yes.
No, it's all right. Yeah. I watch the Premier League. My home team is Crystal Palace. But the Holy Grail is the Champions League, the greatest football competition in the history of football. And we've got to the quarterfinals, as some viewers will know, and we have the most delicious games coming up that possible. We have Monaco, Dortmund, Barca, Juventus. We have Real Bayern Munich, This is like
sounds
heroin.
Momentous. It's no idea what any of those words mean.
Well, just trust me.
The way you're saying it.
It's like, it's everything. It's like football. It's like crack.
Have you seen a? Sorry, it's not like what about a show or a movie? Have you seen anything that you recently that you really loved?
A show or a movie? What did I see? Oh yes, I did see a movie that I really liked, and it's called Tony Erdmann.
Oh yeah.
And it made me laugh, and it made me think, and I thought they were everyone in it was marvelous, and the young lady who plays the lead in it is just. She's lethally good, and that was a very unusual. It was one of the oddest films I've ever seen. Stuff happens in that film.
Yes,
it's just like the weirdest stuff.
The nude party.
Yeah, I'm not going to say anything, but yeah, that particular when he comes in. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
For instance. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I think our time's up.
Yeah. Thank you very much. It was great. So that was Bill.
He was fun.
Yeah, super nice, really accommodating, very just a great all-around.
We didn't take a selfie though.
No, and a lot of other people did.
Yeah, I like to not, well, I don't like to do it typically, but he would have been a good one. And they said don't ask, so I didn't.
Yeah.
But then you go on Twitter and every other bugger's got one, so what? Anyway.
Yeah, that wasn't nice.
Whatever.
I would like to have taken some photos, maybe gone on a roller coaster or two.
Get them to take the photo.
Coincidentally, Their Finest is about the creation of a British propaganda film, trying to get everybody excited about the war and trying to convince America to get into the war. And Five Came Back is on Netflix, 3-part docuseries based on Mark Harris's book, which is about five huge Hollywood directors and how they also created propaganda to help get the country fired up about the war.
Yeah, coincidentally, Five Came Back has just launched on Netflix, so it's curious timing that both of these are coming out at the same time. But it's, yeah, 3-part documentary. It's really interesting. It's the five of the biggest Hollywood directors working in the 40s, how they were signed up and commissioned to create film units to get real conflict footage to show in the newsreel footage that would play in the cinemas back at home for the US audiences. So these enormous directors were William Wyler, Frank Capra, George Stevens, John Huston, and John Ford, each, you know, all the each other's contemporaries, and there was a bit of rivalry between them all as it, you know, when it comes to Oscar time, teases out in the film. But they all capture this colour footage of conflict that the audiences back in the cinemas hadn't seen before. So some of this was quite confronting. And the documentary itself uses the technique of having five of today's big directors telling the stories. They each are assigned a director whose stories they tell. So, for instance,
Steven Spielberg, Francis Ford Coppola, Lawrence Kasdan,
Guillermo del Toro, and Paul Greengrass.
Right.
So there's your five. So they each tell one of their director's stories, and it's all narrated by Meryl Streep as well, because we need to have a woman in there somewhere. I was thinking, actually, it would have been good to have Catherine Bigelow as one of the directors, I thought, telling one of the stories, but I digress. It's really fascinating. A lot of this I wasn't aware of.
Yeah, didn't know any of it. Well, I knew some of it.
Yeah.
Interestingly, they show a lot of footage of American politicians saying this is England's war, they're on their own. And that group is called America First, which is Donald Trump's slogan. So there's a lot of intersectionality between them, both of the things.
Mm. And you see, for instance, William Wyler was shooting Mrs. Miniver when war broke out, but hadn't finished it. And he was a bit nervous about going to England when the film came out, thinking, oh, I didn't quite do it justice. So I've made a story about England being bombed and they really are. They're going to say I copped out. But of course, it was widely embraced. And he almost got a hero's welcome, I think, when he went to England.
Well, I was watching the John Huston interviews. I don't think I've ever seen interviews with him. He's got a really distinct kind of presence. But I realized it was because he's the old creep in Chinatown.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that kind of really came through when we were talking to him. It was very we didn't actually talk to him. Well,
no, when we see him talking.
Yes. Yeah.
Steven Spielberg is talking about, he's assigned director is William Wyler. And there's a part, I think in the second episode, where he's talking about Memphis Belle and that footage where Wyler was up in the aircraft during that exercise over Germany. And it hits home, you know, it's sort of like, what if he was captured there and William Wyler was a Jew? I mean, he wouldn't have been caught. He wouldn't have been treated like a prisoner of war. It would have been, would have been curtains. So there's moments like that, little revelations that you think, of course. Each of the directors talk about the impact of seeing that footage and describe some of this experience of watching the documentary footage. And equally, some of it was faked, and they sort of deal with some of those.
Yeah.
These great documentaries being held up as the real thing when sometimes they went back and staged a little bit of it. Just Paul Greengrass, for instance, talks about that, and he comes from a documentary background. It's interesting to hear him kind of navigate the ethics of staging some footage, but does it ultimately serve the purpose of what it was meant for, to show audiences what it was like, even if you had to fake a little bit of it afterwards because you weren't there at the time?
I've seen a lot of those, all of their movies, not all of them, but I've seen a lot of the big ones, and it was really cool to see them all brought together and this have all of these huge directors united under this singular purpose. And I can't think of, like, how would that happen today? You know, it'd be so... It's not something that you would ever see again, I wouldn't think.
Sure, yeah, for some greater
patriotic
aim or global priority.
Nobody cares about anything anymore.
One thing as well, the second episode, I think it is, does tackle, like, Frank Capra made this sweeping series of films, Why We Fight, looking at various reasons for why signing up and how he co-opted the propaganda material coming out of Germany, sort of Leni Riefenstahl's films, to demonstrate what the other side are doing, just to, as an impetus for maybe to get more of the fellas to sign up back at home.
That's right. He didn't know how he was going to sell people, and then he thought that after watching Triumph of the Will, or that the Allies were done.
Yeah, exactly. Like, as a propaganda tool, it works, because he was, well, that's it then, isn't it? Yeah, it just shows the power of that film.
Yeah. And then he shows that footage to America, and it's supposed to say, look how they think they're better than everybody. Let's go get them.
Yeah, it was a new way of handling propaganda. Yeah. But as well, he had a film called The Negro Soldier, looking at that sort of hit home and what the experience was like for the African-American community in a segregated America, what the war, when it came back that in Harlem, some of the feedback was, well, would it be so bad if Japan actually took over? Like, how would it be any different to how it is here?
Yeah, that was really powerful.
Yeah. So he made a film, African-American soldiers signing up, and the experience that, you know, was extremely revealing to a lot of audiences who wouldn't have given it a second thought, but it kind of hit home. Happily, you actually can watch some of these movies that are referenced in it. They've put them up on the service as well, so that you can see some of the things that
they're referencing. But one of the interesting things is, if you go to watch one of those movies, you should immediately then return to SBS On Demand.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, far be it that we send people to a rival platform.
Good Lord. I mean, what are we all doing here? So at the end of every show, we like to talk about what we've been watching, things we love, things we hate, things we are ambivalent about.
I've been watching another movie about a movie, a documentary about one of my all-time favorites, Psycho. And this documentary is called 7852. 78/52.
The number?
The numbers, yes. Because it refers to the number of camera setups and edits within the iconic shower scene. Yeah, it's great. I was lucky enough to get a preview of it. I don't know where you can actually go and watch it, but I watched it, so we're talking about it. It's from Alexander O. Felipe, and he collects a lot of directors who watch the shower scene and talk about how its impact on them. And it's great. It just focuses on that iconic scene. And it talks to Janet Leigh's body double. It uses a couple of dramatizations in the lead up to it. For about 40 minutes, it doesn't show the shower scene. So I was thinking, have I actually got rights to show the shower scene? But then they get right into the meat of it and show it in different ways, from people's reactions to that amazing scene.
So it's good.
Oh, yeah. It's very good, yeah. Okay. So people like Peter Bogdanovich, Guillermo del Toro's in that one too.
Oh, wow. He's not that busy, apparently. Just he's available.
Yeah, he's around if you need him in a documentary. Yeah, it's quite fun. Maybe we'll end up getting it. Who knows?
I got into the American Playboy, the Hugh Hefner story. It's on Amazon.
Yeah, I've seen a bit of this.
Yeah, I don't even know if there's a term for the genre, but it's documentary style with some dramatization.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it is.
But I don't know if there's a word for that specific kind of style. I found it really jarring, difficult to watch. And I find everyone, all the hubbub over Hugh Hefner, a little bit overblown. I'm sure he's a lovely man. He clearly did some very important things at the beginning of that Playboy run. But I kind of gave up on it.
I watched it too, well, a bit of it. I don't like the format as well. It's, kind of a hybrid documentary-ish. Well, it's a biopic. No, it's a biopic, really.
There's
his son presents it. Yeah. Very corny dialogue, so I sort of tapped out of it. Tell the story, and it does set up, of course, you know, Playboy, aside from the pictures, had the articles, had a lot of prominent writers, wasn't segregated it had black pinups as well as white pinups. It you know, tackled a lot of social issues, but
what
you know,
did you
it was
think
all
of
about
all
the
nudity?
Bunnies too. What do you mean?
There's a lot of nudity in it.
Well, you watch a Hugh Hefner film, of course there's going to be nudity.
Well,
I think you know what you're getting yourself in for.
I thought if the story was that great, I mean, why would we need to be titillated so much?
Would you make a Hugh Hefner doc without the nudity? I mean, I think you're making it for an audience. You're going to expect it's par for the course, I think. Yeah, but that's not what put me off. I mean, I expected that, but the way it was told, I mean, there was some cheesy, and that was the moment where everything changed.
Oh,
and
man, there's a lot of that kind of thing.
So I only lasted about 20 minutes. What about you?
I lasted 25, and then that line happened. And
everything changed.
Yeah, and then I fast-forwarded to the end. There was also, there were moments like, and then I read a book that would change everything forever. And then there's a shot of a man reaching for a book, and he reads the book. And I had a really hard decision to make, and there's a shot of the guy pacing the room thinking about his decision. I can't handle that stuff.
So that's not at SBS On Demand. We hasten
no,
to
we would never show anything like that.
I mean, we're not above it. We've got a Bob Guccione documentary at On Demand at the moment.
Oh, the founder of Penthouse.
Indeed. So that one is an on-demand. I used to work with the publisher of Australian Penthouse, as it happens.
Really? Did you meet old Gooch? Did you meet
no.
the Gooch?
No. And I hasten to add, I was in the payroll department at the time.
But he would sometimes walk by.
No. It was an Australian franchise or something. I'm not entirely sure of the business arrangements there.
How
but
far
yes.
away were you from the publishing floor?
Floor above, but I had to walk around to hand out the pay slips.
Oh, my God.
And I wrote for the
letters?
I had my journalism degree and was desperate to break into writing. I wrote for Australia Women's Forum magazine, if anyone remembers that one.
What?
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
It's where I got my break writing film reviews.
Oh. Did they get saucy?
Yeah, that was kind of like the Playgirl. So it had a lot of bare-chested men.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're not kidding?
No.
Oh, that's
Australian
a real...
Women's Forum. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Didn't like, I mean...
Oh, great.
Had a short-lived run in Australia, but yeah. So I don't think any of that features in the documentary at On Demand. But that's about it, I guess.
Yeah, I think
so. All right. We've covered a lot of ground here today. We're going to put some notes about the show up online. And feel free to send us any feedback or questions to SBS Movies at either Facebook or Twitter, or you can send us an email at film@sbs.com.au.
You can also get in touch with us on the guide on Twitter at SBS TV.
Oh.
Yeah, how about that?
How about that?
It's very new, very exciting.
Welcome to the internet guide.
Still figuring it out. Twitter.com, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you an egg?
No.
Speaking of Twitter, you can at me. I'm at anythingbutfifi.
And I'm at Nick Bassine.
And our producer is Dan Barrett. Thanks for listening. And have a great holiday, Nick.
Thank you.